Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to The Tillage Podcast with the Irish Farmers Journal.
Hello, everyone. I'm Stephen Robb, and you're all very welcome along to The Tillage Podcast. It's currently Thursday morning, the 24th of March, 2022, and the latest edition of the Irish Farmers Journal newspaper is in shops. As always, I'm joined by my colleagues Andy Doyle and Siobhan Walsh to run through your key tillage news stories of the week. So, guys, look, cracker of a week. Spring has certainly sprung. 17 degrees up here in the northwest yesterday, which is just phenomenal altogether. What are you seeing out and about in the fields?
Oh, sure. The place is buzzing at the minute, Stephen. I suppose I was down in Cork at the weekend and things were only getting going. There was a few sores moving, but people were sensibly allowing ground to dry out when the dry spell is given. And I suppose in recent days, I've mainly been around Laois, but over to Carlow as well. And, you know, as you go along the roads, I think I've seen every piece of machinery. I've seen fertiliser spreaders and slurry spreaders and people sowing into catch crops and people sowing onto ploughed ground, and I've seen rollers going as well. So the place, look, there's a hive of activity all around the country, and it's great to see. And hopefully the weather is to hold as well, I think. So it's great to get such a spell and not to have people under too much pressure.
Stephen, a bit different for me. I was on the road yesterday up going kind of north inland most of the time, and I've seen nothing actually going on. I didn't even meet tractors on the road. Other than spreading slurry or that kind of stuff. So things are a bit slower up across North Kildare. Now, I have no doubt in the world that south of me, there's a lot going on, and that kind of echoes what Siobhan is saying, right down into Carlow, Wexford. I was talking to people who expect to be finished relatively soon because they had a big proportion of winter grain already planted. And I suppose that's a feature of a lot of the country that I was through as well, that there's a lot of winter grain in it, and therefore there's not that much spring grain to go in. And therefore, I'm guessing people don't have to get overly panicked about getting it done.
Yeah, and I think some land is still, you know, still quite wet, and it's great that people are getting the chance to leave it, and they're, you know, they are taking their time before going into that ground as well. So that's important.
Preempting the forecast run, you know, we're looking at the very untypical scenario of having all zeros in the rain forecast for the next week. But I always watch Met Aaron's 1 month forecast. And I think they would be an awful lot less optimistic about what happens when we get to April. So there may not be that big or long of a window to get stuff done in a very timely fashion if we don't and can't avail of the conditions that are there in the next 10 days.
Guys, I know there's a push on for beans, or anyone who's grown beans this year. What would you think, or what would you say is kind of the cutoff point in this season for sowing beans?
Seen them go in this week, but people have to remember then that, you know, temperatures are increasing as well. Things are going to heat up, so, you know, roll and spray as quick as possible. I don't know what you think, Andy.
Yeah, there is a little bit longer in the window. I think once you start pushing far into April at all, you can probably grow a reasonable crop, but you're scourged with late harvest, and that's a real problem. And if there's anything stirring on the early crops in terms of chocolate spot and that type of disease pressure, it just jumps across onto the crops that have a lot longer to go, so they're more difficult to manage. But I do detect a change in attitude kind of in the last 10 days or so. I recently just got a call from somebody about sowing beans because they just bought a significant quantity of soybean, and it was costing, soybean meal, it was costing over €600 a ton. That makes beans make sense very, very quickly. Not to talk of the knock-on benefit that's there for both the yield and the nitrogen requirement of the following crop, whatever crop that is. So I'd still say to people, you know, if you have ground that's good enough to sow beans, they're still worth considering.
Okay, so of course, yeah, we have all the spring work going on to in preparation for spring crops, and indeed some spring sowing. What about winter crops? What are we seeing? What I've noticed when I was out and about on the road yesterday around the northeast, that some of the winter oilseed rape in particular is flowering or beginning to flower, certainly. And then quite a bit of spraying going on winter cereals as well. I guess is it now kind of time to be finishing, or now is it now time to be considering your final nitrogen applications on oilseed rape? And in terms of, you know, in terms of, are we seeing any early season disease issues on winter cereals?
Stephen, I would say the answer to your first question on rape is yes. Like, people in the south will have had to have moved on rape at least 10 days ago, because they were seeing the first of the flowers then. Because rape has been bombing along much more so than grain over the last number of weeks when temperatures were relatively cool. And that's what it does every year. So it's not in any way abnormal. So, yeah, we got to get nitrogen out there. Now, it's worth noting that if people have the option to put on some of the nitrogen that might go on now later is a benefit. This nitrogen we put on now is predominantly for grain and seed fill rather than for yield generation. So the later we can put it on, the better. But the reason that we have to go earlier in terms of early stem extension or first flowers appearing is because if you let the flowers out and you go out with a distant spreader, you'll end up cutting the heads off of it with the fertilizer moving like shotgun pellets off the discs. And, you know, we've seen that happen in the past. But if you can get some out now and some out later in a liquid form, which is the only way you'll get it on later, that has to be regarded as advantageous. It's another job, it's another pass. But really, the nitrogen now is about keeping the green leaf going for longer, making grain fill last a little longer, and therefore improving seed fill at the end of the day. And seed fill matters in oilseed rape as it does in winter wheat. You know, it's part of, it's one of the yield components that's actively manageable. So that's kind of what's happening there on it. There's some of the spring crops, some of the winter crops also probably getting the main stem extension nitrogen splits now as well. In terms of what's happening disease-wise, Stephen, look, we've had a lot of mildew on crops in parts of the country, particularly on land that's being well managed, because, you know, mildew was always a problem where we were anywhere close to lay ground at all, where the having better heart in the ground softens the crop, increases the humidity, and gives rise to mildew as a problem. So there was a lot of mildew. It seems to be gone backwards, probably helped to some degree by the cold and the frost, but there's also quite a bit of brown rust out there in particular. Less report of yellow rust, but quite a bit of brown rust on some winter barley varieties and most winter rye varieties, and people would need to be conscious of that. It might just get left behind when growth starts, but where rust is concerned, once the infection is in the crop, I just wouldn't trust it.
And so you'd be recommending, if brown rust is present, that likely a treatment's going to be required.
But it might not be a specific treatment, Stephen. You might be able to wait until the first fungicide. And I think that's what you just need to be in your field looking to see what's happening. Is it actually moving? Are there symptoms appearing on the younger foliage as new foliage is being produced? That's kind of what's going to give you the signal. It won't be the absolute presence of disease, because it could sit there for a while.
Okay. Okay, guys, look, we'll move on here to the other big news off the week. So we have been hearing now for a few weeks that some kind of an incentive to increase the tillage area and try and produce more grains, native grains, was on the cards. And we got a glimpse of what it was going to be at the start of the week. And then finally, we got more details towards the end of the week. So a package worth more than 12 million euro for, I quote, tillage farmers, was approved by Cabinet on Tuesday. So this is, it's unnamed, it's an intervention package. We'll call it a tillage incentive scheme for the purpose of this podcast. Although it's questionable if it's really going to benefit tillage farmers directly, many argue that it won't. In fact, many would argue that it's going to hinder tillage farmers, if anything. So, look, Siobhan, I'm going to come to you on this. Just explain to us what this is. What are the details?
Well, Stephen, look, we're lacking on details, first of all. So, you know, the minister came out, when was it, on Tuesday, and announced this, but, and put it to Cabinet. But we still don't have details from the department on it. As you said, we don't even have a name for it. So we think at the minute it's going to be a payment of 400 euro a hectare for all crops. So if you plant a crop in land that was in grass or was in fallow, and there's a change on your BPS to say that the tillage area has increased on your farm, you'll get paid that 400 euro a hectare. Just to clarify, it's 10 million to hopefully increase the area and crops by 25,000 hectares. And the other 2 million in the scheme are actually for red clover and multi-species, and to put a minimum on the protein payment. So that's the minimum on the protein payment is a real positive, because it's farmers are going to be guaranteed 300 euro a hectare for their protein. So no matter what the area planted is, if you plant beans, you're going to get a payment of 300 euro a hectare. So it gives people a bit of insurance. Just going back to the scheme then, so like, crops will be subject to inspection. So I suppose what I'd fear is that this could turn into a reseeding scheme where people undersow crops and this kind of thing. So they will have to be harvested as well, so either whole crop or harvested for grain. Just on the protein crops, you can also sow combi crops, so that would be spring barley and beans, but the protein payment would be halved. And as far as I understand at the minute, you can't claim both the protein payment and the 400 euro a hectare. So if a combi crop went in on grass, for example, I think you'd just get paid the 150 euro a hectare, but again, still to be clarified. And at the minute, you know, it's all crops. So maize and beet will be paid at the same rate, the 400 euro per hectare, as spring cereals. Still have to clarify whether potatoes are in it. They're a tillage crop, so, and it's, you know, we're trying to secure feed and food, so presumably potatoes would be in it as well. But yeah, I think that's kind of where the details are. And as you said, Stephen, like, first of all, look, I think the scheme is a positive, and I think it's great to see the government coming out with this 10 million to try and increase the area by 25,000 hectares. I think it's a positive. And it's a scheme for the tillage sector, but it is not a scheme for the tillage farmer. And there's a massive difference. We wrote this in the paper this week. There's a massive difference in that, because we have a situation now where the tillage farmers that are out there with the expertise to grow tillage crops are, you know, a lot of them. And we have results there in the survey, which we'll get to later on. But a lot of them, and it would have been advice that was given in the journal as well, are cutting back the amount of fertilizer that's being applied to those crops. So it's likely that yield is going to be back on the crops that are grown on the traditional tillage farms. There's also, you know, huge fuel expenses coming down the line as well. So tillage farmers at the minute who have the expertise to grow the crops are probably not going to grow crops to the same yield as they normally do. And we don't know what kind of yields we're going to get off this new ground either. So I suppose it's unfortunate that the tillage farmers with the expertise aren't getting support in this. And realistically, you know, it's going to be hard for those tillage farmers to secure fresh ground from grass. There's huge competition from land at the minute. So unless tillage farmers have grass on their farm at the minute and are able to plough that grass up, you know, I don't know how it's going to benefit the specialist tillage farmer, I suppose.
Yeah, if I can follow up on that, Stephen, you know, Siobhan's right. As far as I understand it now, potatoes are in. And the only thing that's kind of putting pressure on potatoes is whether or not there will be something separate for a horticultural scheme, whereby it might be taken out of the agriculture and moved towards the horticultural one. But for the moment, it's in. The only technical crop that's not in for the support payment is beans, because it's supported in a different way. So all others are in there, be it rape. And ironically, you know, winter crops can also be included. So it doesn't have to be a spring crop you sow now. If you happened to have sown winter crop following grass, and if that results in an increase in your overall area, you're equally entitled now going forward to access to that money. And it's not a scheme, so it's not something that you would actually have to apply for. Yeah. It happens by default as the department look at your application this year versus last. Now, on just your last comment, Siobhan, I was talking to a person yesterday evening, a bona fide tillage operator, and he had just rented a farm of ground, a farm of grass, which he used to have in tillage, and it moved to grass and it's back again. So, you know, he's one that maybe you could say is lucky enough that, that he will be able to capitalise on the scheme. But in the main, you're right, it's targeted at the people who have the option to do both, which would be the mixed farmer who has grass and tillage, because it's really no good to a grass farmer who doesn't have the skills to grow it, unless that they're willing to link up with another, with a tillage farmer. But that basically means that the advantage is shared rather than gained.
Yeah, what kind of reaction are we hearing on the ground from tillage farmers? I know any feedback I've got has been one of frustration, probably anger as well, and that there was nothing in this package for them, with the exception of Andy, your situation, or a situation where the farmer already has tillage or has grass on the farm. What are you hearing on the ground?
Well, you see, Stephen, we're kind of caught in a bind, because the only way that we can increase tillage area is with access to grass. So, you know, no matter how we want to look at it, the only alternative is to put another tillage man out of business, and that's not what any of us want. So, you know, it does mean finding a way to get access to grass, as distinct, because an increase in the area is what the objective is. It's not just to support tillage. It's actually to try and produce more crops. As Siobhan rightly pointed out, how much more crop it will mean, we'll have to wait and see. Because whether or not it'll result in good land producing good crops or poor land producing bad crops, you know, poorly and maybe poorly fertilized because of the cost of fertilizer, that's not to anybody's best advantage. In particular, if you're something that you're kind of, you think you can only be in for 1 year, that's where it really kind of comes unstuck, because you can't invest in fertilizer for a crop to grow a single crop out of grass this year, not knowing what's going to happen in the future. But whether or not this payment can get people talking and getting them to make a bit more sense between one another, I don't know.
Yeah, look, I mean, we've been calling for support for tillage and for an increase in the tillage area for a long time, and along with, you know, the IFA and the grain growers and whoever. And I think the scheme is good. I think other people, you know, probably think the scheme is good as well. But as you said, Stephen, they're frustrated that they haven't got anything. I suppose the tillage farmers who've been struggling away, keeping the thing going, are going to continue to struggle this year. And next year they're going to, maybe CAP is going to change somewhat, but next year they're going to be hit by convergence as well. So while the government has done a good thing in trying to increase the area, they haven't done anything to support the people who are there. And I think that's where the frustration lies.
Yeah, I mean, we have lots more information and details to find out about this scheme. I think it would be sensible to include some kind of a clause that it can't be for on a 1 year basis, because the scheme is wide open for abuse then. And then, look, what we'll see about the potato situation as well. That would be interesting, I would say, if potato crops are included in the scheme. It'll be interesting to see what comes along then for horticulture, because I know, Andy, you said something might be in the works. So I think we'll wait and see. But part of the reason, or part of the frustration I'm picking up on ground level anyway, is that tillage farmers have taken on so much more risk this year by virtue of inputs. And it just seems that this scheme is kind of flying in the face of them taking that risk. And I think that, well, on page 19 this week, our colleague Pat O'Toole has an opinion piece in about crop insurance and whether or not crop insurance could work in Ireland. And I think that there would certainly be an appetite out there this year in particular for farmers to try and mitigate, tillage farmers to try and mitigate some of that risk. But Andy, I know yourself and myself have looked at crop insurance and how it works in the States in the past, but what's your thoughts on how it could work in Ireland? Or indeed, is there any talk at all about something coming along to try and de-risk the tillage farmers this year?
Stephen, no is the answer. At least I've heard no talk. I mean, look, crop insurance is completely possible. All of the time from anybody, you know, you can probably go to any insurer and get crop insurance, but you have to know what you're insuring. Are you insuring your yield? Are you insuring your price? Are you insuring your income, which is a combination of the first two? And the cost of the insurance is influenced by whichever type of cover that you're actually looking for. You know, all insurance policies that I'm conscious of are based on yield. And in the US, basically what you have is that you have a government scheme where the farmer pays something and the government pays something. But I'm guessing, without knowing all the ins and outs of it, that the payments are pretty much measuring up to the payout on average year after year. But in a country like Ireland, it's long been my contention that it's very difficult for a country to do it on its own. The European Union, through the CAP, has given the option of crop insurance to each member state for years now. For a number of CAPs, it's there. But it's not something that a country, an individual country, can take on its own, because if we get a wet year across Ireland, then everybody needs insurance to compensate for what's gone wrong. Whereas in a country like France, you have a problem in one area, you don't have a problem in another area. You could say the same for Britain, our neighbour, you know, that you're very unlikely to have a problem north and south at the same time. But if you're less likely to have a problem, then who buys the insurance? Who pays the premium? Who builds the fund for the payout? And that's always been the problem in terms of just seeing how it would work here. So I have difficulty seeing how it would work at a price that would be affordable, because it does cost money. And, you know, even in the US, where it's available and we know it's available, there's a lot of good farmers who do not avail of insurance on the bulk of their land. They only insure a small proportion of the crop in a particular area where it's a problem. But then again, to operate that, because it's yield-based, you have to have reference yields from somewhere. And, you know, where do we get a reference yield? Is it reference farmer yield? Is it a reference local area yield? We don't have those things because we've never had to gather them and have them on a local basis. I just don't know how it would work. But of course, I would absolutely love to be able to see something affordable there, because we continue to get 1 year closer to a bad harvest weather-wise.
Certainly. Okay, guys, look, we'll move on. So we're briefly going to talk about our page one story this week, the results of an exclusive Irish Farmers Journal survey conducted on nearly 2,000 farmers. Lots of detail in it, which of course you can read line by line in the paper. Some of the headline figures which kind of stood out to myself was, well, I suppose one third of farmers surveyed said they have no fertilizer bought at all. 70% plan to reduce fertilizer use. I think we would have all known at this stage, but certainly for those one third of farmers who have nothing on farm, I don't think they're tillage farmers now, but certainly you would be worried about them. Some tillage related stats. Something quite interesting. Again, I don't think any of us would be surprised to hear it, but there we have it in our figures. Almost half of tillage farmers will not sow a fodder crop this year. And guys, we would have went into this in great detail over the past couple of weeks, why that is. But there it is. It's in black and white in front of us.
You can just add to that, the people who are sowing the fodder crops then are planting them for themselves. So... That's, I think that's just an interesting point. Like,
Yeah.
But I think it's important to point out that there are some people that are growing the likes of fodder beet and maize for sale to other people. But it's a business that has been secured and embellished over time. You know, It's there. Those people are there every year. The idea of going out and just producing something on spec is just absolutely a non-runner for people. So unless somebody comes in the door and asks you for once off or for the next 3 years, I can understand completely why Tillage farmers would have no interest in supplying it. The other thing that we've got to remember in this is that if we start diverting grain area or tillage area to fodder, somebody is going to lose out somewhere else on the grain side because it will mean less grain. So that means more imports unless the feed demand is decreased. So the only way that these things can be addressed simultaneously to have a bigger total acreage operating.
Yeah, just reading it here now. 171 tillage farmers surveyed found that 69% of tillage farmers who are planting a fodder crop are growing for themselves, while 25% of those farmers are growing for customers. You say that relationship is probably built up over a long time, with the remaining 6% growing on spec. But this survey was carried out before the announcement of the tillage incentive scheme. But guys, I don't think that's going to make much of a difference to those survey results.
Nor would I think, Stephen. No, no. Look, there's nothing in there that kind of says that. Fodder has to be part of what we do. It's predominantly about getting crop area up so as to give us greater self-sufficiency in the medium to longer term, even though it's a short-term measure. The hope would be that when things happen, that they'll stick around for a lot longer than 1 year and that more people might see that it's not such a bad idea and that maybe we could do more of it next year if the same option was there.
Yeah, another interesting
one. Siobhan. No, I was just going to say the question there, will you plant more crops this year or less compared to last year? 65% said the same, 16% said less, and 19% said more. So I suppose that was before the funding was announced. So even if, you know, let's say the 16%, if some of them decided to plant a crop, I suppose, or decided not to reduce their acreage, you know, I don't know. I can't see tillage farmers increasing their area very much.
Yeah, it's probable that cohort, Siobhan, that the reason they're decreasing their acreage is that they've lost land.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the most likely reason for that. Yeah. So, you know, that, and that's the core of the problem that we're talking about now, that there's other elements of the industry that have actually upped the ante to get more land to solve other problems that they have. And they're in a financially stronger position. So tillage farmers are still losing land from that core base area.
The thing we said about earlier, like, you know, that answers our question. Are you going to cut back on total nutrient use in response to the higher prices? 64% said yes.
I might comment on that, Siobhan, and just in passing that, again, talking to people in the last couple of days, there seems to have been quite a number of tillage farmers that had made that decision that came back in to try and get more nitrogen. Because of where prices are going, and that some of them are now kind of saying to themselves, well, look, we're going to rev up again because the grain price is actually going to carry it. At least I think it's going to carry it. What the grain price will be if they're not forward selling, I don't know. And generally speaking, there is really nobody much forward selling at current prices.
But they have to get that nitrogen. And then that nitrogen, you know, could cost them 900 to 1,000 euro a ton.
And they're bargaining on that.
Yeah.
And it's relatively little they would be using late in the season. And that's what guys have kind of decided to do. When the time comes, they might take a different tack. They might say, no, price of grain's gone down. God only knows what. Or other costs are gone up. It still won't pay me. But that's just what people have or how they have reacted in the last week or 10 days.
Yeah, on the horticulture end of things, a couple of interesting stats as well. One of the questions, now look, the respondents, was only 37 respondents, but look, remember, it's a small sector with big output. Are you cutting down on the amount of vegetables or fruit you harvest this year? 37% said yes. What is the top reason you're cutting back on growing vegetables and fruits this year? Energy costs came in at 37, number one, which I think is no surprise, really, you know, considering the cost of running equipment and running fridges and whatnot. 30% output prices for your product was selected as the top reason, and then 23% selected labour as the main issue. Interestingly as well, do you plan on exiting the industry this year? 17% said yes. Again, only a small amount on the grand scheme of things, but as I said, there's a small number of growers with big output, so that's likely to have an issue, or that's likely to have an impact. Before we move on as well, another interesting stat. Some 38% of dairy farmers have said they would consider growing a cereal crop on their farm this year if that meant securing sufficient concentrate feed for cows next winter. That's a lot higher than I thought it would have been. And remember, this was before the incentive scheme was announced. What do you think of that?
Well, Stephen, it's interesting that you say it like that, because I was in conversation with a number of people from the livestock sector yesterday, and the major question that kept coming at me was, will there be access to feed? You know, will feeds be there? Will they come in? And so there is a genuine fear there that imports may very well be challenged. I don't know if that will be what will actually happen in practice, but that's what the fear is today. I just can't imagine. It could be each of those people equally said, when asked about growing tillage crops, not for €400 was the response that they made.
€400.
Not for the extra €400. Yeah, it wouldn't be denting the profit they can make from their alternative enterprise. So I think that's in the main, that's what it'll be. So you might have people that are kind of uniquely located where it's not easy to get access to stuff, and whether at the end of supply lines for nearly everything. And maybe they're not heavily stocked, but the heavily stocked guys, they're not going to pull back any of their land to grow their own feed or fodder. But they will have an interest, of course, in trying to secure it from elsewhere.
Certainly. Okay. Of course, you can check out much more about the results of that survey in this week's Farmers Journal. And while I'm at it, I would also just plug a fodder crops focus, particularly on maize and beet, which Siobhan has coordinated in this week's paper as well. Siobhan, there has been some changes, particularly applicable to tillage farmers in the nitrates regulations. Do you want to just give us a flavour of what they are?
Yeah, look, some of them we've talked about before, and they've just went ahead and were agreed, I suppose. So so providing the emergency green cover within 14 days. So that's, you know, if land is going to be ploughed from the 1st of July to the 30th of November. We also have, in all circumstances, shallow cultivation or sowing of a crop must take place within 14 days of harvesting. So that's within 7 days of chopping or within 7 days of baling, but it should be 14 days altogether. So that's to provide a green cover over the winter.
Yeah, so that's 14 days after harvest.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. The buffer zones then, this is slightly changed. So it says on late harvested crops, so they're, you know, maize, potatoes, and they even include late sown spring barley and things, critical source areas will be identified and 6 meter buffers will be put in place to protect intersecting water bodies. So in the previous suggestion, the 6 meter buffer, I think, was to be all along the water course. So this seems to be different, that they're going to point out the critical source area, which makes sense and is what we hear from the research, that you should target a large buffer at the critical source area rather than just having a buffer all around the field. All our organic manure, arable land, or slurry, must be applied with low emission slurry spreading equipment or else incorporated within 24 hours. So that didn't change. And the slurry dates haven't changed. Well, they've changed, but they haven't changed since the last day. So we would have talked on the podcast about the dates for slurry. So in 2022, slurry has to be spread by the 8th of October. And in 2023, that's moving to the 1st of October. But there is a line in it saying, however, scientific criteria is to be established for the application of slurry up to the 15th of October. And these criteria are to be published by the 1st of September 2022. And just on the other thing, I suppose, the plan in the original new nitrates was that all tillage land, all over winter stubble would be cultivated. And that was to do with water quality and to have something growing to take up the nutrients. But of course, we have loads of birds that are endangered, that have declined in numbers with the decline in tillage area. And those birds depend on overwinter stubble as a habitat, so for feed and some of them for nesting as well. So birds like yellowhammers and isn't it skylark, I think, is the other one. You'd often see them if you were ploughing or whatever in groups. But I suppose that's been changed. We now won't have to have all ground in overwinter stubble, but we're waiting on the details. So they expect to have details of these on the 1st of July 2022. So by the 1st of July, we should know what we have to do as regards to cultivation and overwinter stubble.
Okay. All right, Siobhan, thanks for that. We'll come back to that then when we have more information.
Yep.
So elsewhere, we are launching from the tram lanes this week for the season. And anyone who doesn't know what from the tram lanes is, then where have you been for 5 years? Because that's how long it's been running. Ireland's top tillage feature is back. So basically, the whole premise is Ireland's a big country. There is a lot of tillage. It's not all concentrated in the east, although most of it is. But look, there is a lot going on pretty much in every county bar Leitrim, as far as I know. So the whole idea from the tram lines is to try and give you that geographical spread of what's happening in the fields every week. So we have 12 farmers in 12 different counties right the way across the island of Ireland. And each week we're going to feature three of them. And it just so happens that this year we have a fantastic lineup of growers. You can read all about each of their enterprises, and they are all very different to each other, what they do and what they're involved with on page 40 and 41 in the journal this week. But I'm just briefly going to run through who they are to give you a sense of the kind of geography that we're covering here. So Seamus Duggan, known to many on this podcast from Douro, County Leash. He's returning for a second year, so he is. We also have Patrick Keogh, new grower to Tramlines this year. He's from Bunclody in County Wexford. We have Derek Rogers, cereal and vegetable grower, returned home to farm actually full time after completing his degree in 2019. So he's only young, but it's great to see him on the program. He's in Ballyboho there in Dublin. Ian McMorty, Downpatrick, County Down. He returns for a second year as well. We have Daniel Toomey. He's farming away down there in Roberts Cove, County Cork. Some gorgeous photographs came out of there during the harvest last year. We have Michael Grant from Newton Cunningham, County Donegal. We have Eamon Coogan from Slean, County Meath. We have Stuart Fitzgerald from Avoca in Wicklow. We have Shane Nolan, and he's farming in Finvarra, Burren, County Clare, way out along the coast there. We have George Byrne in Benacerry and Carlow, and we have Kenny Dunn up there in Eglinton in County Derry. And finally, we have James English in Cahir, Tipperary. So look, that gives you a good idea of who is involved and where we're going to be covering from. So yeah, look, kicks off this week. We're into the first rotation next week, and then it's going to run for another 33 weeks. So definitely it's always a feature worth flicking to in the tillage pages.
Really good. So, Stephen, looking forward to that now. It's like the map in the paper really shows the mix across the country. So, and they're all different types of systems as well. Just from listening to you there, you know, there's people direct drilling and min tilling and young and more experienced, and should be really good.
Yeah, absolutely. And even, you know, farm size obviously isn't everything, but there's a big spread of guys. Like, you know, some of them could be 150 acres. We have guys nearly 2,000 acres, you know. It's a spread of everything and everyone and every system, direct drilling, ploughing, min tilling, you name it, it's in there. So it's quite a diverse feature. Looking forward to working with all the guys again this year. So to move on, Andy, we're going to chat about grain markets briefly. What's been happening over the past week?
Stephen, the quick summary is that most days little enough happens. They go up a bit, they go down a bit, and then an odd day they'll take a jump. Like in the lowest part of the post-war trough, they could have fallen back to 300 odd. Now they're back up on December price today is up there at 335. And, you know, ironically, just got a text in as we're recording, Glanbia offering 330 for wheat today for harvest and 320 for dry barley. So, you know, they're the prices. That's kind of where they're operating at the moment. Could they drop? Yes, they could. Could they go up? Probably a somewhat greater likelihood that they could go up. But, they're not going to go up to numbers that make a nonsense of the end user, whether we like it or not, because basically once the price goes up, price rationing begins and people will find other ways to do their business. If you take a country like Ireland, they begin to make more of grass very, very quickly. There's nothing like concentrate to do that or another cost. So that's more or less what's happening on the nearby for anybody with grain in sore still. That's probably strengthened even more. It's been running in the 410, 420 bracket. Those prices have seen kind of further increases in recent days. So you just literally don't know what the nearby price is until you go to the market and ask, what's available. Because that's just the way things are. But I think the one thing that I would want to say is that they're a good deal more stable than they were in recent weeks. You know, you're getting daily fluctuations for sure. You're getting between day fluctuations for sure. But they're nothing like as bad as they were, say, a fortnight or 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. Sorry, Andrew, just that Glanbia price, did you say that's a harvest price, is it?
That's dry a harvest grain. Price for dry grain, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. It literally only came in, Stephen, as we're early afternoon here, as we're recording.
Okay, and is that up or down or on par with their last price?
Oh, that would be up.
Yeah, okay, excellent.
I can't remember exactly what the last one was, but I think it was in the 280s, but the kind of the 280s, I can probably find out, like they were offering more than 280 for green wheat during the week, just to reflect what had been going on.
Okay. Elsewhere, Andy, has oilseed rape, has that taken an upward turn again, has it?
Yeah, look, rape is the one that keeps on giving, and in that respect, it's probably not surprising to me to hear people wanting to put rape into some of the grassland they're going to plough. November rape at the minute would be running about 750. That's probably down slightly. I'm pretty certain it was up in the 760s in recent days. They're dry prices, in fairness, and they're futures prices, but they're indicative of what the relative prices the market can offer. Whether anybody can afford to buy it at that price is a different kettle of fish. It's also probably worth noting in passing that for anybody that might have rape in store, and this is not the physical price, this is the futures price, but the futures price virtually broke €1,000 yesterday and the day before. Currently, it's running at $960 a ton if you happen to have rain in store. Now, you won't get that for it. Nobody is going to kind of pay you for that for it, but that's just what the futures market is doing. Because if we were to sell rape today, it probably has to be exported, and that takes from its value. There's a risk in doing it, and we don't have enough for a boat. So if you put all the things together, it's a theoretical price that most people couldn't actually get their hands on.
Okay. Good stuff, Andy. And just finally, weather-wise, what are Med Aaron saying for the week ahead? Are we going to get all of our spring sown finished, are we?
Stephen, I think the quick answer to that question is no. The next week on Med Aaron's forecast is one of the untypical charts where everything is zero. No rain forecast for anywhere in the country for the next 7 days. But when you read the fine print, you begin to notice that there's mist and fog at night, and it can actually shorten days considerably, particularly on ground that's already ploughed. The other thing that I know is that when I look at their monthly forecast, which people probably are not very conscious of, but it's actually not a bad forecast. It's fair to say, Met Aaron will be the first to say you can't forecast accurately a month out. but they're getting better at suggesting the way the weather trends are growing are going. And basically, they're saying that when we get out of March, that we're getting into a much more broken spell again, which could make planting from there on into April quite difficult. And even in the short term, like for the next week, the wind seems to be in the north, northeast nearly all of the time, or the east for that matter. So, you know, while we have high temperatures for the remainder of this week, it looks like nights are coming again very quick, and we could see a significant drop in daytime temperatures again as you get into the middle of next week. So, you know, don't get caught with the risk of frost if you're doing things in the field. Just keep an eye out on those things. And the growth that's driving the need for inputs at the moment, be that nitrogen or fungicide or growth regulator, it probably will slow down again in the not too distant future.
Okay, Andy. Right. Thanks for that. And there, we're going to have to leave it for another week. So from Andy, Siobhan, and myself, Stephen, Rob, thank you all very much for listening. Until next week, stay safe, stay tillage farming.
We hope you enjoyed this Irish Farmers Journal podcast. You can find all our podcasts at farmersjournal.ie/podcast and on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.